excited to welcome you to Real Woman, Real Torah, a project of Becheva Learning Center. We're here to offer you an authentic Torah learning experience, produced for woman, by woman. I hope you enjoy.
Okay, so in our world of, I guess you could say we are the information generation, where there is so much information accessible to us constantly about everything that we do. And so you can go online and you can find, you know, 600 social media accounts, which will be telling you what is the best way to eat. Should you be, you know, eating plant-based, eating intuitively? Should you pay attention to how you eat? Should you stop paying so much attention to how you eat? You're paying too much attention to how you eat. You're eating in a disordered way. You're eating, right? Like, there's just a lot of different opinions on how we should eat. And I think we've come to a place collectively where we understand that however that happens, it should be in a mindful way, in a way that it is attentive, because eating is something we do all the time. It's such a nourishing and fueling experience. That's what it is. And how can I eat? What's the best way for me to eat? What is the way I'm supposed to be eating? And this mimer discusses what is food? What is the point of food? How do I interact with food? It discusses various different ways, different differences, distinctions between how I eat during the week and how I eat on Shabbos. And basically explains to us how we can turn eating into maybe a more transcendent experience, rather than just being a physical, ego-driven one, but a new sort of mindfulness with eating, not just being mindful of, am I full or am I hungry? Am I having pleasure or am I not having pleasure? But being mindful, am I eating purposefully? Is my eating aligned with my avodas Hashem? Is my eating aligned with godliness?
This week, we're going to be doing Parshas Chayesara. The mimer for this week is not directly connected to a story in the Parsha, but kind of takes this, the word for Ma'aris HaMachpelah, right, which is the place where Sarah is buried at the very beginning of the Parsha. And we start talking about some of the symbolism of that word Machpelah, how it's connected to other ideas.
And we see also that in general, Ma'aris HaMachpelah is, it's not just that Sarah is buried there. Avram goes through all the negotiations in this at the beginning of this week's parsha to buy it. So obviously there's something about this place that is more than just a new random burial place. We know Adam was already buried there, and he really tries to cement his ownership of this place. So obviously it has some sort of significance. We're not really even going to explain the significance of Ma'aris HaMachpelah. It's interesting. The Alter Rebbe just uses this idea of HaMachpelah, if you break down the word, is broken down into He Kfela, which means the double He. And we're going to discuss the significance of the double He. What does the double He mean? And to understand it, we're actually going to take it to understand this idea of a double He, to understand a quote from the Arizal's Piyut that we say on Shabbos Day. So the Arizal wrote different sort of poem songs for that correspond with each of the Shabbos meals. So there's one for Friday night, not really necessarily Shabbos meals, the different times of Shabbos, the different energies of Shabbos. So the first energy of Shabbos is Friday night. That is Azamer B'Shvachin, sung in all Hasidic homes on Shabbos. Then Shabbos day we have Asadir L'Sudasa, and then Shabbos afternoon is B'nei Hechala. And in Asadir L'Sudasa, there is a line, Yegale lan tame, let Hashem reveal the meaning, debisrei sename, of the 12 breads, de'inanas bishmei, they are letters of his names, kfila uklisha, the double one and the weak one. So, as with much of these poems that the Arizal wrote, they are quite cryptic and Kabbalistic. And what does that mean? Like, reveal to us the meaning of the 12 breads. So just before we even get into that, in general, Kabbalistically, we know that halachically, we have two loaves of bread on our table. Every Shabbos, we have lechem mishnah. Kabbalistically, there is this concept of 12 breads. And there are some people who are more Kabbalistically inclined, or some Hasidish rabbis that actually will have 12 loaves of bread on their Shabbos table, arranged in like a whole special order. I heard once that one of the reasons, I don't know, I've never verified this, but one of the reasons that we do six braids in our challah is that when you have two six braids of challah, you end up with 12.
Mm, interesting.
That there is some sort of symbolism, yeah, of 12. Mm. So we have these 12 breads that we're supposed to have on Shabbos. And we're saying, reveal to us the meaning of the 12 breads that are a letter in Hashem's name, the double one and the weak one. So what are the letters of Hashem's name that we're referring to here? In Hashem's name, we know Hashem's name is Yod and Hey and Vav and Hey. The first two letters of Hashem's name, the Yod and the Hey, they're referring to the Chachma and Bina of Hashem. We discussed this a little bit in Parshas Lech Lecha. The Chachma and the Bina, the powers of God's intellect. And then the Vav and the Hey are the transmission of that Chachma and Bina to others, right? The Vav is Hamshacha, it's a line. And then the Hey is Malchus, it's as it's expressed to others. The Vav is called a weak letter. Why is it weak? Because it's one little line, it's kind of wobbly. Right? So just like visually, you can see that there's a weakness to the letter. And then the Hey is called Kfela. It's called double. Why is the Hey double? In general, first of all, in Hashem's name, there are two Heys. So automatically, there's a doubling of the Hey. Additionally, there's this concept of the Miloy of Shem Havayah. What is this concept? It's a Kabbalistic concept. And we're going to refer back to it a couple of times over Sefer Bereishis. Kabbalistically, so we know that the gematria of Yod Kei Vav Kei is 26. We refer to it all the time. It's some people's lucky number. The 26, it's obviously a very significant number. But we know that in each letter isn't only the letter itself, but you can also spell out the letter. So if you would spell out Yod, it would be Yod Vav Dalet. That would be the miloy of the word Shem Havayah, of the letter Yod. When it comes to the Hey, the Vav, and the Hey, there's different ways that you could potentially spell those letters. I don't know if you've ever tried to write Hebrew words in English. I always have debates with people, what's the correct way to write it into English? It can be a funny question because there actually is no correct way. You can choose however you want to write those words into English letters, right? But even in spelling out the letters, Hey could be Hey Aleph, Hey could be Hey Yod, Hey could be Hey Hey. And those different miluyim, the ways that they spell out and are filled out, will result in different gematrias. So if you add up those letters, right, you add up the yod and the vav and the dalet, and then let's say you're using, in this case, we're going to talk about, we're using the hay. Let's say we're filling it with hays, right? So that would be yod, vav, dalet, and then you have hay, hay, and then you have vav. The Vav is not going to have the Hey in the middle. It's going to be, let's say, Vav, Aleph, Vav, and then Hey, Hey. That will lead you to what is called Shem Ban, which is called the name of 52. So when you double up the Hey with itself, that is Shem Ban. A little Kabbalistic, but it means a certain way that God is expressing himself to us. He's using, let's say, the Shem Ban energy. And we'll explore the idea of Shem Ban in another mimer. But for now, we're just going to hold that thought in the back of our brains as we go into this mimer, that there is this concept of the miluyim of Hashem's name, and that the hey can be doubled. It can be the double. It's called the double letter because it's spelled out hey, hey. Okay? So we're going to jump into the mimer. We're actually going to skip the beginning part, which is just talking about this idea. And we're going to go into the third line of the mimer. It says, V'ha'inyan yuvan. In order to understand what we're talking about over here, behakdem, we're going to preface, L'havin inyan ha'achila. We're going to talk about eating. So today we're going to talk about eating. We like talking about eating. Eating is a fun topic to discuss. We're going to talk about eating. Eating in a Hasidic sense. I feel like it could be like a tricky topic, only because it's interesting how certain things have become just very moralized in our world. And I think eating is one of them, where everyone has their feelings about I guess, what you're allowed to say, what you're not allowed to say. People have a lot of traumas regarding eating. So it's an interesting topic. And I think maybe one of the reasons that it is such a charged topic are food habits. Some people telling you, oh, this diet is the healthiest diet for you. People saying, no, this is the healthiest way for you. People saying, no, just listen to yourself. Just judge intuitive eating, right? Like, food is a very contentious topic. And maybe one of the reasons it is because of this idea that we're going to discuss over here. And so we'll get back into it. See, kihine ikar ha'achila li'ayis, ki min ha'maychol nas ha'achila v'dam. What's the main point of eating? Eating is so that from the food, it goes into the body and it becomes fat and blood. V'hadam hu'a nefesh v'chayis ha'adam. And what is blood? The blood is the soul, right? The blood is the soul of the person. The blood goes into the heart. It energizes the person. And it gives the person their life force and their energy. We know that food is energy. Calories are energy. That's what food is. So he's saying the main reason that we eat is to have energy. And then v'al yedei zeh mis'ala ha'maychol shenaseh mimenu leiv u'mayach ha'adam. Through this, the food is elevated. That from it, it goes into the mind and the heart of the person. And then his whole mind and heart are strengthened to be able to do as avodas Hashem. So we started off sort of, we have two blocks of purpose over here for eating. Number one, we said, okay, food, what's the main point of food? Food is the energy of a person. And then we said, okay, and then what the point of that energy is so that we can use our minds and hearts to do our avodas Hashem. So the purpose of food is to energize us so that we can then do our avodas Hashem. And that is why if you want to be sort of eating intentionally in a Jewish sense, in a religious sense, what does eating intentionally mean? Eating intentionally doesn't only mean, okay, I'm fueling my body so that I have energy. I'm going to eat foods that do give me energy and don't detract from my energy. I'm going to eat in a way that it, right, like sometimes we can eat in a way that maybe takes away some of our energy, but instead I'm going to be mindful about the way that I eat so that it does energize me. But not only is it that it should energize me, but then where am I channeling that energy into my service of God? That is what it means to eat mindfully as a Jew. To eat in a way where we are incorporating that process of eating into our avodas Hashem. Because everything we do in our lives is supposed to eventually lead us to our avodas Hashem. We don't do anything extraneous, really. It's supposed to all be a part of, there's food is neutral and it can go either way. Kosher food is neutral and it can go either way, right? So either I can use it to serve God or I could use it not to serve God. And this is how you would use it to serve God. But ach kol zeh hu b'yemeis hachol. All of this is only during the days of the week. Aval b'Shabbos b'irer aser. But on Shabbos, b'irer, which means separating, is sorting, probably is the better translation. B'irer is aser, it's forbidden. So one of the lamatas melachais is b'irer, which is the act of separating. In general, we say it's separating the bad from the good. And it is one of the melachas of Shabbos. So on Shabbos, barer is aser, and ha'achila hu yaiser al yena. So the level of eating is a much higher level of eating. Hamshacha milamayla, it's drawing down from above, v'karesa Shabbos eineg, and we call Shabbos pleasure. So what exactly is going on over here? So I love when, like, you see the purpose of halacha in coming from like a Hasidic lens where things are not just random, but like there is a deeper intention to the mitzvah, the halacha, which is mirroring like a spiritual state, not just, you know, you can't do this and that's it, right? But it actually has sort of a spiritual significance. Throughout the week, what is our avodah? Our avodah is this process of sorting constantly. That is what we're doing, because like we said previously, everything in this world back up for a second. Everything in this world that is permissible for us to engage with, this is what we would call klipas nega, has potential to go either towards positivity or it's towards negativity. So all the neutral things in this world, food, clothing, all goshmias, my time, my energy, people, everything in this world has the potential to be utilized in a positive way or in a negative way. And this process of making that choice of how I'm going to engage with the world is called the process of birr. It's sorting. I'm taking the good, either the good from the bad, or I'm taking the bad from the good. I'm separating these and I'm making distinctions in this world. Oh, this is something I'm using for holiness. This I'm discarding because I can't use it for holiness. Right? You could say eskafia and ishapcha. Eskafia, oh, I'm not going to engage with this thing right now. I'm going to push it away because I cannot yet engage with it in a way where I could transform it. It has too much of a hold over me. Versus ishapcha, this is something I can sort. I'm sorting it out, and this is something I can engage with in a way where I can successfully transform it to be positive.
Right, meaning like when it comes to like things which are like kedusha, right, like holiness, then like it's obvious what the right thing to do is, and also things that are like obviously evil. It's obvious, like, again, doesn't necessarily mean that we're always doing it exactly right, but it's clear to us what like the right path is. And I think the areas of our life which are the most like foggy and require the most like sifting, so to speak, right, where we have to really like reflect and like have really like sort through which is this going to take me in the right direction or in the wrong direction? Like, is this going to, what's going to be like the follow-up to this? Where is this going to drive me? Where is this going to take me in my life? That sort of process of being able to really sift through those gray areas in our life and figure out, like, is this really going to serve my purpose? That's like a much, yeah, that's where that Avaida Bayra really comes in, is in that area of klipas nega, like eating as an example.
Right. And the example that is often brought, or I think that people used to bring a lot, is eating. I think, as I mentioned previously, because eating has become so like moralized and like it's like a tension point for a lot of people, I think the example I would use today, right now, for a lot of people would be technology. It's like such an obvious and big one where we have to do so much sifting because it's a huge part of our lives. And right now we're recording Tara on our computers. We're using this technology to make this happen. I was telling my husband as I was preparing for this mimer, I was like, I was listening to a class. I was on my phone a lot. And I was like, I'm not doing other things. I'm preparing to share. I'm just using my phone to prepare the share. Like, it's not like I'm using my phone to just distract myself. I'm actually preparing the share. It was cool to me. I'm like, hey, I'm using this technology in such a positive, obviously positive way. But at the same time, because it's so entrenched in my life, that there's so much better that has to happen for me personally when it comes to technology. There's so many, it's like very easy for me to be swayed in a negative direction with the technology. So
right.
I find that personally to be like a huge area of bayrer for me.
Right, right. And the distinctions can be.
I can just cut it out.
Right. And distinctions can be so subtle.
I can't just say, no, I'm not going to engage.
Right.
Exactly. Because there's so many positive things that I would miss out on if I would just shut it out. So that's where I see that I need to sift so much. And when it comes to food, similarly, we have to do that sifting of, am I engaging with it in a proper way? Something interesting that I was thinking about when it comes to food is that the pleasure of food can be such a selfish pleasure. You can have a pleasure of food where you're just like sharing a meal with other people. But very often, like when someone's eating a good meal, like you're eating, you don't want to be disturbed by someone else. You're just like, you're having this like very solitary, pleasurable moments, as opposed to other pleasures, which are more easily shared with other people. Even like, right, you're eating something good, and let's say your child comes to you and wants part of it, some of it. You don't want to share. It's like, I'm enjoying this.
Relatable. Way,
right? Like, it's spicy. It's spicy and, right, delicate, and then they're not interested in having it or whatever it is, right? So you don't want to share because it's like a very selfish pleasure. And so that's where we see that food could be very egotistical and selfish, as opposed to being something that is energizing me for my Avedas Hashem, right? So And specifically with food, we also see a very interesting paradox. Not only are we engaging with it to elevate it, but we also rely on it, right? So it's like certain things you can say, oh, Hashem says you're supposed to elevate everything in this world. So I will get it and I'll use it and I'll go out and seek it out because I want to elevate it. I'll engage with it because I want to elevate it. But food, I can't cut it out. Like there's no space to say, I need, a human being is totally dependent on food. Right? It's one of the things we need. We can't survive without it. So why is it that we are so dependent on food? It says about the human being, Achbar v'ketem tzartani. I was created first and last. The human being has a soul, and the soul is a very, very high source. Especially the Jewish soul, one with Hashem, right? It's before the universe even existed. It's eternal. It's from the highest level that can be. But the body of the human was actually created on the last day of creation. Everything else came before the human being. All other creations were created before the human being. So that's this idea of Ahor, last. We were created last. Quite literally, we were created last. And that element of our existence means that we are dependent on other creations. We're dependent on the tzemeach and the chai, right? We need the plants, so we need the animals to feed us and sustain us. Why? What does it mean? The fact that they were created before me doesn't only mean in the linear way, in a time way fashion, that they were created before me, but the concept is that physical creations, the root of the food, the source of the food is actually from a much higher place than the human being. Kabbalah explains, and it's mentioned in this mimer, that there, before Hashem created this world, he intentionally created a world that was not sustainable. And this was called the world of Taihu. Why was the world of Taihu not sustainable? Because it was massive energy. It was crazy, intense, strong energy. And the vessels were not able to contain the energy. So an example of this would be Esav is considered to be a soul of Taihu. He has all this energy, but he doesn't have the vessels to channel the energy. And similarly, that's what happened before God created the world. He created a world with a ton of energy, but the vessels did not have the capacity to contain the energy. And an example for this would be, let's say, you know, if you plug an electronic device into a blow dryer directly into the main power plant, what's going to happen? The blow dryer does not have the capacity to contain the energy directly from the power plant, and it's going to just blow. You're going to blow the fuse. So basically the fuse of the world of Taihu blew and all the vessels shattered. And the imagery is that it fell down into the next world, which is called the world of Tikkun. Tikkun means fixed, rectified. And this is a world where there's a lot less energy. In our world, we have less energy, but we have broader vessels that are able to contain the energy. And that's what allows our world to be sustainable. But embedded within our world are these shattered vessels of Taihu, which contain much, much, much greater energy than our world has. And where did these things land is in the physical world. They landed in the very physical parts of our world. And one of those places is in our food. And this is why food has the power to give us energy. Food has the power to give us life because it actually comes from a higher source than we do. And therefore, it's able to sustain us and energize us. But in its current state, it's not rectified, right? In its current state, it is what we would call a fallen vessel. So even though it has this huge energy, it's not currently in a way that that you're able to really use out that energy in a positive way. And that is why it is our job to then take that energy and channel it with the vessels that we have, with the broader vessels that we have in the world of Tikkun. we then have the ability to transform this Tayu energy and make it sustainable. So we have sort of the meeting of both of these worlds, where we have the awesome energy of Tayu post-showering. It's able, we can then, with our broader vessels, with our knowledge and understanding and focus and mindfulness, we're able to channel that energy to harness it and then put it to work in a useful and sustainable way, if that makes sense. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Our job of eating. And that this is the barer, so to speak, of eating, is we're sifting through the food, taking its energy, harnessing that energy, and then utilizing it, putting it towards a positive act. That is what we're doing when we're eating. That is the avaida of eating. So what we've just done is we've taken something mundane and simple and that everyone does all the time, and we've explained, and I think to some of us who've learned Chassidus for a long time, it's like, duh, of course, that's what we do when we're interacting with the world. But it really is quite, it's really a shift. Because you can say, okay, so you eat. Do you eat to live or do you live to eat? You know, that's like the classic way of understanding it. But it's not just that. It's, am I transforming the world into like revealing massive holiness in this mundane action of eating? I'm channeling incredible, incredible energy.
Yeah, I think what you were saying before about like, you know, the whole topic of food being such a contentious topic and like people having so much like, I guess, baggage with it, right? And I think part of it is like there is this sense or awareness that like food is very powerful, and we're like you said, we're so dependent on it. We're so for our energy, our like everything that makes up who we are, and being able to function and being able to really access our potential in a full way is dependent on something that's so physical. And I think the challenge is to be able to like take that power and not just direct it in this very selfish, egocentric way, but be able to like harness that power and harness that energy for like a certain purpose. I think that's kind of what the challenge is. And like you said, like this is a prototype for engaging with the physical world in general, where there's a lot of energy and a lot of potential out there. These are all like sort of, and that potential is coming from this very high source. And the goal for us is to be able to like identify that energy for what it is in its source and harness it for a purpose.
Yeah. And so that, so what we've discussed so far is just regular eating. On the weekday, every day, we're eating to live, we're eating to stay in a good mood so we can be happy and interact with people around us. That's one way of, you know, channeling that energy positively. All the things, all the reasons that we eat. But then on Shabbos, our eating sort of shifts. And we're going to explain why, based on all this, the understanding that we've said until now. So I'm going to read a little bit inside. Aval ha'achila b'Shabbos, but the eating on Shabbos, hiyam shacha milamayla, is a drawing down from above. So what did we say until now? Until now, we said eating on weekday, we are engaging with things that have fallen down, with energy that has fallen, to elevate it and direct it in a positive direction. So that would be milamata lamaila, from below to above. But on Shabbos, our eating is from above to below. We're receiving a nourishment from above to below. L'saiva nafshei, to satiate our souls. On Shabbos, we're not eating to satiate our bodies, to therefore be able to utilize the energy, to use the energy in our bodies to do our avodas Hashem, but rather the eating of Shabbos satiates my soul. Machmas hamaychal k'maishahu b'shar shay lamayla. Because on Shabbos, we receive energy from the food directly from its source above. Kaidam shanafal b'shriyas hakelim, before it fell in the shattering of the vessels, she'ein by birur, and it does not require a birur. It does not require a sifting. Why is this? What happens on Shabbos? On Shabbos, Hashem rests, right? 7 days of the week, six days of the week, he's working, and on Shabbos, he's resting. What's the difference really between working and resting? Working is expressing. What is the whole creation? all of creation is Hashem expressing, sharing his light. We know how did Hashem create the world is through speech. And the Baal Shem Tov teaches us that the world is constantly being re-spoken over and over and over again into creation. So that's an action of expression. What is rest? Rest is when we go back into ourselves, right? We retreat back into ourselves. That is rest. When I'm in bed, I'm taking a nap, or I'm taking, in most of our minds, I think when we say, okay, I'm going to rest, that means I'm going away from other people. I'm retreating into myself. I don't need to be in an expressive state. I'm in an I'm in internal state. I retreat into myself. With God, resting. If Hashem would truly just retreat into himself and not express at all, what would happen to the world on Shabbos? The world on Shabbos would just no longer be, because our world is dependent on God's constant expression. So what does it mean that Hashem rests on Shabbos? It's not that he abandons the world and goes into himself, it's that he takes the world into himself with him, whatever that means, right? So the whole entire world elevates into God. And so instead of Hashem needing to express the world into being, the world is in its inherent state of beingness within God and its potential beingness state. And everything in the world is elevated back into its source that is within Hashem. And as we said earlier, food comes from a higher place than the person, right? The interesting thing is that we mentioned that the soul, the Jewish soul, is really the highest that there could be, right? That's one with God. This is true. However, even with the soul, there are two parts of the soul. There's the essential soul, and then there is the created soul. So there's the soul as it exists within God, and then there's the soul as it comes down into the world, into creation, into the human being. It doesn't mean the essential soul is not there when it's in the human being, but it's not the part of the soul that's gone through the process of creation. The essential soul remains one with Hashem all the time. And our created souls are still were created within the world of Tikkun, as opposed to food and the physical things that we engage with, which are sourced in Tikkun. So on Shabbos, when we eat, we're receiving the energy from Tikkun, but before it shattered. Before creation, pre-created Tikkun energy, which is much higher than what we have now. And it hasn't fallen, and it doesn't need to be rectified. It's in its inner, already perfect state. And it's just us receiving energy that's higher than us, and it's satiating our souls. And therefore, on Shabbos, we don't need to be... I don't think the point is to say that, oh, you can just gorge on Shabbos in a selfish way. But that necessity for directing the energy is not as strong as it is on during the week. It says that you're supposed to prepare delicious food on Shabbos. You're supposed to be able to take a certain pleasure in the food on Shabbos, because there isn't really the potential in the Shabbos food for negativity, because it's pre-fallen state. It's in its already rectified state. And therefore, it doesn't really have, the Shabbos food is Kedusha. So the same way you can't use, like you said earlier, Hadad said that there are certain things that are obviously good, right? A sitter is obviously good. A shayfar, tefillin, these are things that are items of Kedusha. On Shabbos, our food is sort of an item of Kedusha. It's automatically, inherently good and positive for us. So... Kamesha Kasa B'Zayar, like it says in the Zayar, Perish Shabbatchem, like Amar Shema Shanara Shanasa Milamata Lamaila, Al Yadei Birur, Kamai Bimai Sachal Yeshbait, Perish Shahup Silas. During the days of the week, we need to make this separation. Because why? Because there is Silas, there's waste. The same way that when we eat all the time, right? This is the physical way that food is digested is a representation of the spiritual avodah that we're doing. When we eat, the body takes the positive and then it discards the stuff that's not useful, right? That becomes waste. So spiritually, that same thing is happening, right? We're able to, it's a sifting process. That's the process of Birur, where I take the positive energy and I discard with stuff that's not useful to me. I discard the yashas, I discard the ego, I discard the klipa, I discard the shell. That's what I'm supposed to be doing when I'm eating. But on Shabbos, like we said before, there's no bearer. There's no bearer. You're not supposed to be doing the sifting on Shabbos. V'zehu bearer, aval b'Shabbos, shehu nasa l'mayla l'mata. But on Shabbos, when I'm receiving from above to below, in by p'saylas klal, there is no waste. Ki ha-p'saylas hi hu me'etz hadas tayvira. The only reason there's waste is because when good and bad became intertwined, that was when only during the one after the sin of the Eitz Hadas did good and bad become intertwined. What did that mean? All of a sudden there was a self-awareness after the Eitz Hadas, right? That's what happened after Eitz Hadas, was that all of a sudden we became aware of ourselves. We became, ego was introduced into the picture. So when we're in a state of ego, that's when there's potential for there to be bad in the food. I could be eating to feed my ego, not my body, not to nurture my body and nourish my soul. And therefore, I need to sift when ego is involved. Vilamata nasa tevara, below in this world, there's good and bad. Vegam b'chal adam yesh tarivas tevara, also within every person there is now a mixture of good and bad, and there's the necessity for sifting, chulu. Aval b'Shabbos az tesaneg al Hashem. But on Shabbos, then we take pleasure in God. L'mayla me'etz hadas, it's beyond the level of Eitz Hadas. On Shabbos, we, again, transcend within God, and that means that we're beyond existence, beyond creation, and therefore we're beyond sin. And we transcend into the state that's higher than ego, and therefore the necessity for distinctions is not important, and instead my soul is able to be totally nourished, and I'm able to take pleasure in this action of eating, and it's a wholly positive experience. And now, before we get to back to our original point of Yagale Lantami, it's actually, he makes an interesting note about Yantif. And again, this is so interesting to see how, like, the halachic reality is mirroring the spiritual reality. On Yantif, are you allowed to do Bairar? So the answer is that on Yantif, we are allowed to do Bairar if it is Echal Nefesh, if it is food that you're preparing, right, that you need for the Yantif, right? So on Shabbos, we're not allowed to do any food preparation. Versus Yantif, you're not allowed to do most malacha, but malacha that pertains to certain needs on Yantif, you're allowed to do. So Yantif is sort of like this in-between state. It's not as holy as Shabbos in the sense, and it's not as mundane as weekday. It's sort of this in-between state. And it says that if you don't have Shabbos guests on, not Shabbos guests, because they're Yantif guests. If you don't have guests on Yantif, it's a bad thing. It says you'll have negative repercussions. It doesn't emphasize this about Shabbos. It emphasizes it specifically about Yantif. Because Yantif is not, the food is not in its perfectly elevated state. So if you want to elevate your Yantif meal, you need to have a guest. Why do you need to have a guest? Because again, where does this whole concept of sifting occur? Only when the ego is involved, right? Why is there ego? Ego comes from the level of Hashem being in a state of gevura. When Hashem is in a state of gevura, that means he's in a state of contraction. He's hiding himself. When he hides himself, therefore, ego exists. Other is able to exist. When Hashem is in a state of chesed, of sharing himself, other people aren't really able to, your sense of ego is not able to exist as strongly because Hashem's presence is so overwhelmingly obvious. But when Hashem retracts, that's when our own other creations are able to sort of come into being. And that's why Hashem retracts, so that other things can exist. So ego is sourced in gevura. It says, what sort of sweetens the judgments? What sweetens gevura is joy, simcha. Simcha sweetens the judgments. So on Yantif, what can you do to elevate your food so that it's not in a state of ego, but rather it's in a positive state, is you invite a guest. so that you can bring joy to other people. And through this action of bringing joy to others, you sweeten the judgment. And that's what allows you to both enjoy your, to have your cake and eat it too, right? To like enjoy your yuntif meal so that you don't have to worry that it's not being misdirected into negativity. Right. That was just, it's sort of like a little side point, but it's an interesting fact.
It gives a whole new appreciation for the value of having guests on Yom Tov.
Exactly. You're supposed to have guests on Shabbos too, but they're not a necessity to turn your Shabbos meal into, you can have value to your Shabbos meal without guests versus Yom Tov. It seems like the value in your Yom Tov meal is sharing it with others. So back to our original pasuk, right? Not pasuk. It's not a pasuk. Is it a pasuk? I don't know. verse of our song, Yigale Lantami. So explain to reveal the meaning of the 12 breads. The 12 breads that we have on Shabbos. Now that we understand that on Shabbos, what is our eating? Our eating is revelation that we're getting from above, right? We're receiving energy from above on Shabbos. That's the action of eating on Shabbos. We're receiving this massive energy that we can't access on our own. So the 12 breads is symbolizing the food that we eat on Shabbos, right? It's revealed to us the 12 breads. The 12 breads meaning this massive revelation of godly energy. Now, how do we receive godly energy in general? Like we said before, we have the Yud and the Hey as the energy itself. It's the Chachma and the Bina. It's the energy as it exists above. And the Vav and the Hey is how the energy comes down, transmits to us. It's an interesting concept is that the Yud, how does the Yud transmit? The Yud transmits through the Vav. As you can see very visually, it's that the Yud then goes down, becomes a Vav, right? So that's how the Yud transmits. It's through the Vav. And it's very interesting. Yud is the idea of Chachma. Chachma is a spark of an idea. It's an idea and it's very contracted. It's like in a flash. And it's able to transmit just through passing it down into a Vav. Just through lengthening it and putting it down, it's able to transmit to the other person. Versus the Hey. So the Yud itself, you can see, sort of turns into the Vav, and that's how it transmits. It's one. It's almost like one letter. It's just the extending of the letter down. Versus Hey, we see we have two separate Heys. It's not just a transmission of the idea in one letter. There's a Hey, and then there's another Hey. It's not just the expansion of the idea. When it comes to an idea of Chachma, Chachma is actually, even though it's the deeper point, and it's a higher point, it's actually easier to share with others. Examples would be sort of, you know, like those one-liners that are really deep, but anyone can get. Or a story that has like a lot of depth, a mashal that has like layers and layers of meaning, but you can tell it also to a kid, and the kid will appreciate the story. In a sense, it's easier to transmit an idea that no one really, really gets. Right, you're not like fully understanding. It's like a chachma understanding. It's an intuitive understanding. For that, all you have to do is transmit it and share it. And at whatever level that the person gets it, they get it. Versus bina, hey, which is once the idea is starting to become more internalized, it becomes a lot harder to share. I can't just share the idea as it is.
Right, the analysis of the story.
Instead, I have to almost like come up with a whole new, I need to give a mushel. I need to come up with a whole new way to share the idea to somebody else if they don't have it already in their brain. So I can't just transmit the idea as it is. I need to turn it almost into something new for the other person to understand it. And that's why, so the hey is transmitted through the hey and the yud is transmitted through the vav. But as we receive it right now, it's in a weakened state. We're not receiving the yud and the hey as it is. We're receiving the yud through the vav and we're receiving the hey, through the second hey, which is a lower hey, which is the power of malchus. We're receiving the bima through malchus, which weakens the idea. We're not receiving the whole the whole idea as it is. So right now we receive the idea kfilo klisha. We receive it doubled, either with the hey, meaning malchus, klisha, and weakened. We're not receiving the full entire energy of Tehu in our 12 breads on Shabbos. And Yigale Lantame is a prayer, it's a request to Hashem, reveal to us the Yod and the Hey as it is, without needing the Vav and the Hey. And that's what's going to happen when Mashiach comes. When Mashiach comes, we're going to be able to receive the energy of Tehu directly, not just on Shabbos, and also even on Shabbos in its direct form and its exact form. It's going to come down to us on as it is for itself. And that's what it says over here. Just ach kol zehu she'anu mekabel mashpa al yedei yod beis lechamim bizman hazeh. All this that we explained previously about the yod and the hey, how it's shearing through the vav and the hey, is only how we receive the hashpa in our bread from our bread during this time. Meaning this tayu energy, how we're receiving it, is only as it is right now. Avala asad lavei, but in the future, yigale lantame, Hashem is going to reveal to us the actual reasoning itself. He's going to reveal to us the meaning itself, dibisrei seiname, that are in the 12 breads. V'azai layeh b'chinas kfila v'hu, and it's not going to be in a way of kfila and chlisha, it's going to be in it in all of its strength, rak hahei atzma, shalomaila, just the letter itself as it is above. La gila lamata will be revealed down below. And that's one of the things that we're praying for, is being able to receive this energy as is. So we just went through this whole explanation of food and the sources of food, all to get us to this place to understand that in the future, we're going to be receiving even greater revelations when Mashiach comes. So this idea of Yigale Lantame revealed to us the meaning of the 12 breads, we're really understanding over here through our understanding of what food is. Food both being something that we elevate from below to above during the week, but then on Shabbos being this immense revelation of godliness that we receive from above, that's what we're receiving. That's what these 12 breads are. And right now it is Be'inanos Dishmei, which it is in Hashem's name. It's the letters of Hashem's name that are being transmitted, the Yod and the Hey. But right now it's transmitted in a way of Kfilo Klisha. It's transmitted in a way of doubled and weakened. Versus when Mashiach comes, we're going to receive it in all of its strength in its purest form. We'll have the ultimate revelation of godliness when Mashiach comes.
Nice. Okay, so this mimer had a lot of Kabbalistic references and was a little intricate. Zizi, let's try to do like a summary of what's like an overview of what the mimer said.
So to just wrap it all up, we started off with the concept of Machpelah, which is this HaMachpelah, is this idea of the two hays. And we use the two hays to springboard into a discussion of this line from the Arizal of that we want to reveal to us the meaning of the two breads that currently come to us in this doubled fashion. And we use that to understand just the whole idea of food in general, because we're talking about bread, right? So we're just talking about what is food. And we spoke about how food has two different ways that we interact with food. On the one hand, we're commanded to elevate the food and to use the food to then to channel it in a positive way, in a way of berer, where we sift through the positive parts of the food, discard the ego, the shell, the waste, and direct its energy in a positive way. So that's us impacting the food. But then on Shabbos, the food impacts us, because food comes from such a high source, from a source of Tehu, which is even higher than us, right? And it's a higher energy than us. So on Shabbos, we just, being that everything retreats to its source, we're able to receive from the food, from this level of Tehu, we receive a huge revelation of godliness on Shabbos. Through our action of eating, we actually are experiencing a revelation of godliness. Currently, while we're in Galus, we don't necessarily see that revelation as strongly, because it's coming through certain filters, as we discussed the whole discussion of the Yud and the Hay and the Vav and the Hay. And in this line of the Arizal, what we're saying is we're asking for the future when we're going to experience this massive revelation in a way that it feels revelatory to us, in a way that we're actually going to be able to experience unfiltered this massive experience of godliness through the 12 breads, through the action of eating. So we sort of discuss the significance of eating, which is, you could say relevant, of course it's relevant, which is just something that I think is important to bring into our minds, not in a restrictive way of like, oh, I can only eat to serve Hashem, but rather to recognize that, wow, everything I do is so significant, right? Like every moment of my life is significant. Every bite I take is significant. To introduce a general mindfulness into this process, it doesn't have to be, like I said before, it doesn't have to be a restrictive mindfulness, but an idea of like, right now I have the power to direct this energy. And where do I want this energy to go? And how am I nourishing myself? And how am I nourishing my soul? And I think these are ideas that we can really take with us into our lives.